Hello, I'm Shate Marsh, co-founder of Big Car Collaborative and director of exhibitions and programs.
And I'm Sean Oreo Jones, co-founder of Treese and rapper musician behind Bless.
In this series, Mari Evans, an audio family album, we are focusing on an American treasure, one of the Black Arts Movement founders and Renaissance woman, Mari Evans. Born July 16, 1919, she was a poet, philosopher, composer, educator, artist, and television personality who improved and inspired the lives of countless citizens in Indianapolis and around the world.
And you will hear in her own words and through her family, Chris Femster, Eric Femster, Matthew Femster, and Navaya Femster, who and what made Mari who she is.
Family was most important to Mari Evans. And so you will hear a chapter from her book, Clarity as Concept, called Family as Foundation.
And we will be sharing the audio from The Black Experience, a TV show that Mari wrote, directed, and most times hosted.
I was fortunate enough to work with Mari for 2 years on a mural of her at 448 Mass Avenue and an exhibit about her. I've read all of her poetry, book of essays. Mari gave me her friendship and a whole new perspective on being a woman of color and an American. Sean, did Mari and her work influence you?
Yeah, Mari's work really influenced me, not only as an artist, but just as a Black man and a human being through the lens of experiencing life and family and trying to find out who I am as a human being. Just her words inspired a lot of things, and it was truly a blessing to meet her after the unveiling of the mural celebration and being able to record an actual reading near Mass Ave, and it's been something that I'll hold close to my heart the rest of my life.
You recorded her final reading, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, something that I'll never forget.
Well, before we begin, we would like to thank the Women's Fund of Central Indiana and the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts for making this series possible.
In this episode, we will hear from her family. Shate spent an afternoon talking to them. And now, without further ado, we begin.
Welcome, and we're joined today with the family of Mari Evans, and I'll have them introduce themselves.
Okay, my name is Eric Femster. I'm Mari Evans' oldest grandson. I'm in an education field, KIPP Indy, and I've been doing education for about 14 years, so I've been involved in education 14 years.
Hello, I'm Matthew Femster. I'm Mari's great-grandson. I currently do a lot of music. Her work and her piano playing really got me inspired to do music, so I followed that. And I've been doing it since I was a kid, probably about 11 or 12.
Hi, I'm Navaya Femster. I work at a concert venue, and so I love live music as well. And so that's a big part in our family. So it's nice to kind of work in that atmosphere and all that stuff and see different things all the time.
And I am Chris Femster, the youngest grandson. I am the father of Matthew and Navaya Femster, and I work in law enforcement for about 25 years now.
So would you want to start out today by sharing with us maybe either a selection of Mari's work that you'd want, that really resonates with you, that you'd want to share with people starting out?
Sure.
Yeah,
I'll go first.
All right, there you go.
Got a little bit of a jump. So the poem I'm going to read is called The Silver Cell. This one really resonates with me just because it kind of gives you that option that you are pretty much in command of your own life. Whether or not you have that freedom or if you're restricted by those freedoms is up to you. So it goes like this. The Silver Cell. I have never been contained, except I made the prison, nor known a chain, except those forged by me. Oh, I am a slave, and I am a master, am at once both bound and free. And like I said, that one just really resonates with me, just because it really just displays how much control you have over your life, and how much free will is, I would say, is given to us. So that is my selection for what really resonates with me with one of her pieces.
What about you, Navaya?
Well, I got to flip to it. Hold on.
Well, while she's trying to find it, I'll tell you mine. I like The Rebel because it shows her funny side. And when it was written, I think she wrote it with a smile. and the rebels, when I die, I'm sure I'll have a big funeral. Curiosity seekers coming to see if I am really dead or just trying to make trouble. and that is her personality for me.
Yep.
So that's the one I really enjoy by her.
That's a good one. My favorite is I Am a Black Woman, just kind of now entering the workforce as a young lady. It's super impactful for me. And it goes, I am a black woman. The music of my song, some sweet arpeggio of tears, is written in a minor key. And I can be heard humming in the night, can be heard humming in the night. I saw my mate leap, screaming to the sea. And I, with these hands, cupped the life breath from my issue in the canebrake. I lost Nat's swinging body in a rain of tears and heard my son scream all the way from Anzio for peace he never knew. I learned Da Nang and Pork Chop Hill in anguish. Now my nostrils know the gas and these triggers, tired fingers, seek the softness in my warrior's beard. I am a black woman, tall as cypress, strong beyond all definition, still defying place and time and circumstance, assailed, impervious, indestructible. Look on me and be renewed.
There's so many dimensions to her because she wrote children's books.
Musicals as well.
Yeah.
Eyes is a beautiful musical.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Listening, or at least going through a little bit of the sheet music through it. Really impactful, especially the way that the melodies are and those minor keys matching the lyrics. It is really beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to share a little memory that I have of her where I was having a really rough day and I went to see her and she played the piano for me. And I remember also, though, she was very disappointed in me for not teaching either of my children how to play a musical instrument. She like gave me a look and I was like, oh my, mm-hmm. She was pretty disappointed.
It's funny because I'm the only one in the family that doesn't play an instrument.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I decided to go get concussions playing football.
Oh,
sounds about right.
Yeah. So Matthew's a very good musician. Avea is a phenomenal musician, even though she's kind of let her skills slide playing the flute.
I played flute in high school for marching band and also like orchestra and wind ensemble.
Yes. Symphonic band and then wind ensemble.
Wind ensemble. Yeah. I played flute for a little bit. It was fun. Yeah. I know. I drew inspiration to play the flute because Mom Mary, she had like antique like old musical instruments in like a bin, and some of them were like wooden flutes and pan flutes and like all sorts of stuff. So whenever we would go over there as kids, Matthew would play on the piano and I would try to pretend to play a flute melody.
You pretended very well.
Well, since I couldn't find my first choice, I'll go with a second one. When in Rome. Maddie dear, the box is full. Take whatever you like to eat, an egg or soup, because there ain't no meat. And there's envy in there and cottage cheese. Woo, I had some black-eyed peas. There's sardines on the shelves and such. But don't get my anchovies. They cost too much. Me get the anchovies indeed. What she think she got? A bird to feed? There's plenty in there to fill you up. Yes, I'm just the sights enough. Hope I lives to get home. I'm trying to eat. I'm tired of eating what they eats in Rome. And so what I gather from that one, and we've kind of discussed that one a little bit. I know I'm kind of little sketchy with the with the language here, but what she kind of described in that one is just kind of our state as blacks here in America, and just the difficulties that we have in our experience here, at Rome being kind of synonymous with America, and just the challenges we face here to get the things that we need and the resources that we need. And those are the challenges we still face. So that's a really poignant one for me.
Well, I think the biggest thing too is to remember what year she was born in. She was born in 1919. So there's been many challenges despite the color of your skin for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just single out just black people in that instance, because despite the challenges she faced, she rose above them. And instead of going, when she had the opportunity to move into, because you know, the more money you make and the more successful you are, the less black people you'll see. So instead of moving into a suburb or moving to, you know, Martha's Vineyard, where a lot of seems to be the popular thing to do these days, you know, she stayed in her neighborhood and she stayed with her people. And as she got older and started to have health issues, and I asked her to come stay with me before Eric moved back. And she told me my neighborhood was too sterile. It took me a second to try to figure that one out, but I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. So,
yeah.
You know, it's, I understand you have to look at the perspective she was looking at. And she said that in a, I think it was a WFYI interview where she said, you know, she looked at the world through a black lens. And you're talking about a female black lens, and one that was born in 1919. The community was different.
Yeah.
Communities were different.
Evolving constantly.
In 1919 as opposed to now. So I wish we could get back to more where she was in her heyday, when there was much more of a coming togetherness, as we read in Who Could Be Born Black. So, you know, I think we're getting away from that at this point. So
I agree. Yeah. And just her dedication to stay, like you said, Chris, in the neighborhood was huge.
Yeah.
And she would have visitors come from all over the country, and
the people's poet.
Yeah.
You could just walk up and knock on the door.
Absolutely.
How many people you think you
there
could
was
do
an
that
openness
to, yeah.
to there her, was an openness. Her presence.
Sure.
You know, she was very inviting. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the beautiful things about you know, our grandmother.
Yeah,
that she was very inviting, very open. And she loved people, kids.
And very inviting to everyone.
Yes.
And I think that's what's a lot of, I understand she wrote from her perspective to black people.
Absolutely.
But she was inviting to everyone. When she, you know, she changed churches and went to a church that was very diverse.
Right. Right.
It was DEI before DEI became a thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
she was multifaceted, you know. Man. And but she loved her people.
Oh, she loved her people.
She loved her
absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
And she was dedicated, and she understood the, like I said earlier, the challenges and the need for a lot of systemic changes. Mm. You know, she understood that. And she was just great, you know. It's just like you said, Chris, she was very inviting, very open. She was a people person.
A people
for
person.
Sure.
Yep.
And
she hence was the nickname People's Poet.
Exactly. And so she was always just welcoming.
Yeah.
You know, and open. So I appreciate her for that, because, you know, you meet people sometimes who have notoriety, and, you know, they're not always the friendliest of people, you know. But she was very much an open book.
Yeah.
What you see is what you get.
Oh yeah.
You know, she's very authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I loved, I never wondered where I stood with her. And very, you know, just told me like what she thought. And I remember, you know, speaking to the, she was like, look at this. This is Oprah had sent her a puzzle to invite her, I believe, to her house.
Yes.
And, you know, just how far into the world her reach is. And this day, you know, like she's transformed America.
Yes.
Through her language. And so many people that are working in the world today making huge changes, like Oprah, were influenced by Mari. Yeah.
Yes.
Even though she was here in Indiana.
Yeah. Right. She was genuine.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that's what is easy to recognize.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of black merchants and they're selling. I mean, in a capitalistic society, they'll sell blackness. They'll sell whatever they're trying to sell. And I know we spoke earlier about this idea of people, you know, whether you're identified as black or how you identify or who's authentically black, if that's ever a thing, and can you be black enough, you know, that thing. And I've always disagreed with that. I don't think it's a particular, just travel around.
Yeah.
You know, go down south, go to Texas. Yeah. Yeah. And black people could be anything. It's not a particular type of stereotype or
right.
And you see it sometimes in the NBA, you know, when you see some of the biracial players play, you know, and they try to act like a stereotypical person from the street or something and try to talk.
And to add on to that too, you kind of glorify it through like music videos and such. Through my personal experience, I was in Boston for the first time at Berkeley. And I had a friend from Dubai that I just met, and we were spending the day together. We went to Wendy's on campus and just hanging out. And he looks at me, he goes, "I didn't realize you guys acted like that." And I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, "Well, the only exposure I've seen in Dubai is through rap music videos and from like service industries. I've never actually got to talk to somebody and spend the day with somebody." And we're still friends to this day. But kind of adding on to your point to further that, I mean, not only do you see that in sports, but you can also see it depicted in movies, media. I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. Like,
black is not just one thing. It can be several things. It's all encompassing, if you will.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We're multifaceted.
Yeah. You go to Texas and see how many black cowboys you see.
Yeah.
You'll be amazed by, like, they have a black rodeo?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you look at, I know this is going to be far out there, but you look at, like, Lil Nas X video of rodeo, like, he's all dressed up in black and the cowboy hat. So, you know, it's not just what you see from, you know, just constant, like, you know, hanging pants and all that stuff. It can be so much more.
Sure.
It is so much more.
Sagging pants.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
And out of slip.
With Beyonce, she's got a country album out.
Yeah.
You know, that shocked the world. It really did. But she's from Houston, Texas, and that's part of her culture.
Yeah.
You know, and people kind of forget that we've created a lot of these music genres.
Sure.
You know, country jazz. Being one of them, jazz, R&B, hip hop, it goes on and on.
It's kind of strange because when nothing's really cool unless a black person, like black culture says it's cool.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. And that's kind of good and bad all in the same breath because you can influence so much. Because you look at some of the rap videos and over in Asia, they're rapping.
Yeah, and all over the world.
All over the world. You look at what Kendrick Lamar did at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, amazing performance.
And how many memes you get or whatever TikToks.
Where they're trying to
dance. Like it's very, a lot of influence.
Very influential.
Mm-hmm. So when we talk about Ma Mary, we have to understand the kind of influence she has and what she was trying to influence.
Right.
And it could be positive, it could be negative, but she was bringing a positive influence to the world from her vision from, you know, 1919 is a long time ago.
Yeah.
A lot of things changed during that time too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. A lot of things changed in the world.
What do you see that vision as? Because, you know, a lot of people don't know. I mean, she was a philosopher too. She wrote Clarity as Concept. And, you know, she talks about some of these things. Can you talk more about that.
As far as her vision for Black America, I would say just Black empowerment. You know, she's a part of the Black arts movement, and she was very pro-Black, very pro-Black empowerment, you know, economic empowerment, social empowerment in every way, you know. And so I applaud her for that because that's a very courageous stance to take. You know, in America.
Yeah. Now, Eric and I were born close together. He's late 60s, early 70s for me. And I see the same thing. And I see community.
Yes.
She wanted a togetherness of a community. which I never felt that it was there. And we had that discussion at a Kwanzaa one time.
We did. That was epic. And that was one of the best Kwanzaas.
Yeah, it was. I think Judge Brewer was there.
Yeah. But what was interesting about that is Ma Mary allowed everybody to speak.
To speak their mind.
You know, even if you were challenging.
Yeah.
You know, she was like, okay, we're going to open the floor. And yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's one thing we need to understand, too, about her personality. There was never a right or wrong. It was just your point of view. So when she says that's her, the way she sees the world through that lens, that's what she's talking about, her point of view.
Yes.
So she would never say you were wrong. You know, and this is a person that will never raise their voice. I've never heard her yell.
True.
I've never heard her curse. And I mean, she was very much a lady.
Yes.
And I think it's kind of fallen off in today's date. It's very hard to find ladies. We get a different type of... person in today's world. And I think that's disappointing. It's disappointing for me being born in the early 70s, looking at both of my grandmothers, my mother and my aunt, and seeing ladies. And now I don't know what I'm looking at. It's unrecognizable in some people. So that's how I feel about it. Guys, how do you feel? What do you think her message was? Nevaeh, you're a black woman. How do you feel? What do you feel like? How she influenced you?
Kind of similar to like how you said, like being black is not multifaceted. I feel like being a lady is the same thing. It's not multifaceted. I mean, it is multifaceted. Like there's different ways to be a lady. It's not just being proper or following a certain thing or what you think society should. You should. There's a lot to being a lady, especially in today's day. And I think that's kind of how she influences me, is being strong in myself, kind of going through the world, because you kind of have to be your number one advocate. And sometimes that doesn't look ladylike, I guess, especially when you're dealing with everyday life, especially as a young woman in the workforce. Even with older women sometimes, like the way they are and can be hateful. And that's what I've experienced. You have to be your own advocate. And sometimes I guess that doesn't look ladylike. So sticking up for yourself for sure. So I think that statement for me, it's like, you know, there's so many different layers to being a woman. And I feel like when I look at Mom Mary's work, that's kind of what I see, is like being tall and strong like Cypress, right? And kind of all that jazz. So it is definitely what I gather from her, is unifying like community, like everyone said, and also being a woman and trying to navigate that, because it is not easy at all. Not easy. No.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree. I'll go more in the vision direction for that one. just because with all of your guys is what you said, I'm going to agree 100%. There's nothing else to really add on to it, because then I'll just be reiterating what you guys are saying.
Sure.
Now, with her vision, I would say definitely the community getting together more, I think, was her vision, especially with her... TV show, The Black Experience. You saw so many different people coming on to that show, so many different aspects of life, and so much music or poetry going on to it. So I really believe that with art, what she was trying to do, and then also with the poetry as well, just trying to bind all that together to really build together a strong community through that front. So that way it's more expressive of the Black community as a whole versus, like, I don't know how to word it, but instead of it just being one single thing, it's so much more. It's so much more expansive.
So true. I'm glad you mentioned the Black Experience.
Yep.
Because when I thought about what you just said, I thought about how much of a trailblazer she was.
Sure.
You know, no one was doing that type of thing back in those days. So she was really breaking new ground.
Yeah, there's only 4 episodes left. Because at the time they were filmed, they would record over the tape.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
good point.
Yeah.
True.
So that it went for how many years? 2?
A couple of years. It didn't go for long. But it was very impactful, you know, because she was really exposing a lot of our history that was educating the public at that time. And like I said, just a total trailblazer because there was no one doing that,
yeah,
you know, in those days. So
now, being that she was born in 1919, I think that's clear, but she was raised by her father, you know, and, you know, her mother died when she was 7. So she went through a lot of changing of the world with her dad at the helm there, you know. And I think her experience with, it's difficult because as a, I'll let you talk about it, Eric. I'm not, because I don't want to go into too much.
No, that's fine. That's fine. That's okay. As far as family, she was definitely all about family. And, she had my uncle and my dad and of course us. And we just had a lot of different experiences together, a lot of unique experiences. I know for me growing up, you know, she exposed me to a lot of things, you know, that I understand even as an adult that I wouldn't have gotten that exposure had I been raised in a different family.
Sure.
Maybe. You know, so she was definitely about trying new things and exploring, you know, exploring new ideas, you know.
I think we got lucky in that.
We did.
100%.
Because, you know, today's society, you know, your value is based on your wealth, like how much money you could generate.
Or what you have.
You know, what you have, your things. Mm-hmm. You know, we had great people.
Yeah,
and to me, that I hold that more value than any kind of material item that you could ever have, or how deep your bank account is.
Yeah, wealth can be so much more than just materialistic value.
Sure.
I mean, we have a wealth of wisdom and knowledge.
Yeah,
yeah,
and so, good people. We can't say we have a bad family member. Yeah. And how rare is that?
Right.
And we're talking about both sides of the family.
Exactly.
Yep.
We had great grandparents, great parents.
Yeah.
Great, you know, I mean, it just, we didn't, had great uncles. And, you know, it never stopped. We didn't have anyone that was bad in our family.
And, Chris, you mentioned Grandbilly.
Yeah.
Grandbilly, you know, and that's Mom Mary's, you know, I'm calling her Mom Mary. That's what we called her.
Yes.
So that was Mom Mary's father. Mm-hmm. And she loved him. Mm-hmm. You know, she had so much respect and admiration for him.
And, very dignified gentleman.
Yeah, very much a gentleman.
A gentleman.
Yeah. You know, he wore the white shirts with the ties. Mm-hmm. And very formal, you know. And that was kind of the era they came from.
Yeah.
You know, and it was awesome. I remember as a kid, Chris and I were at his 100th. He was over 100 years old.
Yeah.
And I just remember that sheet cake and all of those candles, like 100 candles. I don't know if you remember that.
Very hot in the room.
And all of us were there, you know. And there he is at 100 and something years old. And we're helping him blow all of those candles out, you know. And it was just a significant moment, you know. And then I thought, you know, wow, you know, we came together. You know, I was just a little kid, maybe 4 or maybe about 6, because you were here.
Yeah,
maybe about 6 years old. And I was thinking, we met up, you know, him at 100 and something years old and soon to pass on. And I've been here 6 years and we meet up in this space, you know.
Yeah.
She understood the relevance of that. And she always documented, you know, took pictures.
She was very big on documenting.
Yeah, because she understood the uniqueness of that situation, you know.
I think she understood the uniqueness of our family and, like you're saying, the situation that we're in.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think a lot of people would recognize. And that's why I said I have a difficult time nowadays with today's changing society.
Yeah.
You're talking about somebody that was cut from a different cloth.
Yeah.
And here we are today.
And they often say, like, be a Renaissance man, but I think she was a Renaissance woman. She was so smart. Just very wise. And not only that, but people don't talk about it, but she was also very athletic too with her tennis career
Well. Yeah. She's extremely athletic.
In my mind, you know, she was the perfect example of what it means to be a Renaissance person.
Sure.
What it means to be not only a poet, a scholar, but also, I mean, you say warrior, but I would say she's also athletic.
Oh yeah.
You know, she had such a strong mindset
Yeah. Yeah, she spent a lot of the summer at Riverside Park playing tennis, and actually she taught me how to play, and I went on to play in high school, and I need to get back into it because it's part of my childhood growing up, but she was instrumental in that, and she played till she couldn't play anymore. Mm. She had a partner that she played with, and he passed away. Mm. And yeah, that was kind of tough for her to go back on the court. But she was just physically just not able. You know, she's getting older.
Yeah, well, she was in her 70s. Yeah. Like I was saying. I mean, that's incredible. It's not golf.
Yeah.
It's tennis. So it's a very athletic kind of endeavor, you know.
Yeah, and she just loved the sport, just loved tennis. We used to go to matches, you know, downtown, you know, when they had the big, you know, names come in. Mm-hmm. I remember meeting Arthur Ashe, who was, you know, an icon, a tennis icon. You know, and I just never forget how we met him behind the bleachers. We, you know, he walked off the court, and I'm a little kid, and I just never forget the way he looked, and he was just covered with sweat, like he jumped in a pool. And he was very gracious, and you know, and shook our hands and everything. And my Mary was always a queen, you know, you know.
She had a lot of people that I think you would. I mean, you've spent tennis camp with Ramsey Lewis and his kids, right?
Yeah, his sons. Yeah. Ramsey Lewis, the piano player, was jazz pianist.
Yep.
Ramsey Lewis, yeah. Mm-hmm. I stayed at, I met him at a tennis camp in Chicago.
Yeah.
Because those guys are from Chicago.
Mm. Yeah.
And it was kind of funny because I just hit it off with these guys. You know, we just hit it off. And they were like, where are you staying, you know? I said, well, I'm staying at my grandmother's friend's house in this brownstone, you know? And they were like, would you like to stay with us? I said, sure. You know what I mean? I didn't know that they were the kids of Ramsey Lewis. And one of the older ladies there at the camp said, do you know who their father is? And I was like, no, I have no idea. You know, oh, he's a famous pianist, you know, a famous jazz artist. I said, oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So long story short, you know, spent the weekend, I guess, at that time with him. And it was very nice. You know, he was very amazing. You know, he was an amazing person.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. And my Mary got a chance to meet him, and they met. And that was so fun. You know, he just, it was like two legends coming together and just, you know, just uniting, you know. So that was cool. Yeah.
I'm going to pull it back to politics for a minute because I was working with Mari, you know, when Trump was first elected, that we were, you know, talking about it, and he hadn't quite been elected, but I think her and I were both feeling he was going to win, even at that point when everybody else was
thinking he didn't
have a chance. But one thing she had told me was like, well, it's not going to matter, you know, if he wins or not, or what he does, or the government, because we will be okay. She had this confidence, you know, that I saw, you know, that it wasn't going to matter, that, you know, whatever he would do, she would be able to overcome, that the community would be able to overcome it. It wasn't, you know, that there had always been, you know, resistance between the government and, you know, the Black community in her eyes.
Absolutely. And go back to your point, Chris, the 1919, she's seen a lot of that.
I was about to say she's seen a lot of presidential elections.
Yeah. Yep. So she's endured a lot of different types of leadership. And she knew that at the end of the day, we're going to be okay. You know, we're going to be just fine. You know,
and a lot of through the Great Depression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know,
exactly.
World War II.
Yeah. So she was like
the Red Scare. Yeah.
The building of the great, the Berlin Wall and the tearing down of it.
Yeah. Not a lot of people can say that. Not a lot of people can say that.
I watched them build it and watched them tear it down.
Yeah. So she's like, we're going to be okay.
Yeah. I mean, she also lived through a lot of controversies with those leaders as well. So that's another point to bring up too. She's seen, she saw a lot.
So that's important to remember, you know, because I know now there's a lot of fear mongering, you know, whoa, you know, well, what is he going to do or what's going to happen, you know?
Right. And I think that's just because it's an ease of technology. You can easily reach out to other people, influence people a lot quicker than you could back in the day.
Sure.
Right. Because back in the day, you had the newspaper. You had to go out, get it. If it's in print, if you're not nearby a newspaper, you have to turn the radio on.
You have
on.
To take the time to read it.
Exactly. Yeah. Not a lot. Well, even today, not a lot of people do it. You know what they do? They look at a video, whether it's on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, or whatever. They see like a 10-second reel. Watch the reel. Oh, now I know it.
Right.
Don't read the news article.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you get this.
No in-depth.
All right. So it's kind of half-cocked. Like you kind of have half the information you need, but to make a, you know, a full
judgment,
you don't have the whole facts and circumstances presented to you.
Sure.
Right.
So that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah.
No, true.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
Vaya, you were born, you and Mari share a birthday.
We do. We're both Cancers, which is a great sign. It's a water sign.
Here we go.
It means we're very emotional. No, because it's true. Water signs are very emotional.
Tell us about your nurturing water sign.
And I feel like Mom Mary was all those things. Very nurturing, very emotional, and she was great with her words, and that's what water signs are known for.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
But yes, very long time apart. I was born in 2002. She was born in 1919. So we obviously have very different things like we lived through, you know, COVID being mine. I graduated during COVID. But it's just very interesting to same day, different years. And it's crazy that like, even though it's so many years apart, we still got to know each other. Yeah. And I think that's really amazing. I think that's the cool thing about the universe. It brings people together the way it needs to.
Yeah.
And it works the way it needs to.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I got a question for you, Nevaeh, if you don't mind.
Oh.
So
that's her brother.
Yeah, that's me. So how do you, because I know I have an answer for this, but how do you think Mom Mary influenced you to who you are today, like become who you are today?
I feel like Mom Mary, like the main way that she's influenced me as I get older is how patient she was and how her words were like every single word she used had a purpose. Mm. I feel like I blab a lot. And so I'm trying to work on like the way she was, like everything she said had a reason and purpose why she said it. It wasn't like a roundabout whatever. And so I think as I get older, trying to do that is something I've been working on and influenced by. And I just find it easy to blab. Yeah. So I've been trying to work on that. Her work did
impact. Yeah. She would write a poem and write it over and over. And if a word's out of place, she was definitely a
perfectionist.
Definitely. Yeah. There's not a single word out of place when she writes it. That's what she meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A poet was reading her, one of her pieces, when she was getting the Lifetime Achievement Award down at the Central Library. And that's what the poet said. That poet read one of her pieces and said, there's never a word out of place.
Sure.
You know, because it's just, she splits hairs with it, you know. And I just remember as a young musician, you know, I was energetic, had a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready to move to Minneapolis and get going, you know. And she was like, send me some of your stuff. You know, I said, I'll send it. And I'd send it, and she's like, that sounds cool. It's all right. That's your first idea. Where are you going? I said, okay. But I understood then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, she had a word for it, but it's just that whole constant revision, until you get there.
Yeah.
You know, and just being willing to hang in there and work it, you know, until it gets to where it needs to be.
It was 24/7 too. Like I felt like it wasn't an on and off, like it was on all the time. And then it's like, you wouldn't even realize if she said something that was like, not insulting, but like kind of making fun of you. Like it took a second for you to like sit there and register the fact that she just made fun of you.
I completely understand that because,
I understand that one her, too.
I was an adult. Yeah, I was an adult in my 30s, like early 30s, before I realized that my Mary and Dad were arguing at a point. like they were having a disagreement. They would never argue.
Right.
There was never yelling. It, and right. That's the thing. In our house, there was never yelling and slamming and stuff. Right. You know, it's different. But I was in my early 30s when I realized, oh, they're having a disagreement, because you would never know. It's like you said, there were choices. And your grandfather was the same way. Her oldest son, Evan, he was the only person I've ever known that could match her wit and her intelligence. And a lot of times they're talking way above your head.
Yeah.
And you realize it, like when you're driving back somewhere and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, you got to unpack that stuff.
Yeah, but it was so impactful, because neither one of them would just babble.
Right.
It's like you said, when they said something, it had intention and meaning.
Yeah, it was very intentional. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So was there a space that she was writing that you were allowed into, that you saw, or was it just around?
I would say it was more around.
Yeah.
Like, even when I was little, very little, I just remember, like, she would write everywhere. Like, it wasn't necessarily one space. And I think, and this is assumptions, but I think the reason why she did that was because she was trying to get more perspective, if you will, like not just writing in one space and being holed into one space, and this is the only place where I can make whatever, but more so that the poetry is always flowing, if you will. So it's not like you're just subjugated to that one area, or like my dad tells me, pigeonholing yourself, but you're expanding upon it. So it's not just like I have to sit down at this one space because I have creative energy flowing at this one space. More like, you know what, I have an idea, I'm going to jot it down, and then I'm going to make sure that I'll perfect it throughout. But once that lightning has struck, just make sure you're getting that caught in the moment.
Yeah.
She was a unique person.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing that you feel like, there's nothing she couldn't do.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And I know she used to ride on the train a lot, train and buses. That was kind of her.
You know, as she moved through the world.
Yeah, as she moved through the world, you know, she may be have some type of speaking engagement somewhere. So she was constantly moving, and she rode the train and the bus a lot. So it was a lot of road trips.
Yeah.
Because she didn't fly at all.
She did not like flying. She had a bad experience.
She had an experience in the air that, and I remember her telling me, if I'll share this experience, you know, she told me this, and she said that she was in the plane and those masks began to drop down out of the top, you know, the oxygen mask. And everybody's shaken. Even the stewardesses started to become shaken. So now she's like, oh boy, you know. And she told me she prayed to God.
Yeah.
And told him, hey, if you get me back down on the ground, I'll never get back up here again.
This is not where you want me.
And she said also to me that she said, she thought it out in her mind, if this plane goes down, I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to yell and scream. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go down with dignity, you know. And this is in her mind. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, that's the way her mind worked, you know.
Yeah.
You know, she's just thinking, okay, if it goes, this is how I'm going to behave, you know, on the way down, you know.
Mm-hmm. And she had a very strong, a unique person beyond what you could, you know. She told us when it was her time to go, she'll decide.
Mm.
And when she passed away, it was her decision.
Yeah.
And it wasn't sadness, no. You know, for me, I know, because it's kind of odd. I wasn't, you miss your parents, you miss your grandparents, but there's sadness in the fact that they're no longer with you, but there wasn't, any kind of despair, any kind of real deepness to it, because you enjoyed the fact that you had them during the time that you had them. I knew we were extremely blessed to have great parents and great grandparents. So it, you know, and with her, when she passed, I was like, that was her decision to go at that particular time.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's more. Yeah. Because I think the day before she was playing the piano and the,
oh,
she didn't like where she was. I mean, she wasn't in the space that she wanted to be in. you know, because she was always, we never saw like a man figure like other than Grandbilly.
Yeah.
That was with her. Like that was her father, but we never saw another man in her life, you know, right, connected to her other than our, you know, my father and uncle or our father's uncles, you know,
but exactly,
she didn't have a boyfriend around and, right, and, you know, baby daddy's kind of thing hanging out at the house. So that never was in the picture. She was right, her own entity, you know.
So true. Yeah. So true. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm with you, Chris. It was a sadness when she passed, but, she told me something about death. She said, first of all, it's a process. And then the second thing she told me is that after a person passes on, they're closer to you in death than they were in the physical realm that we're in, you know. And so that was very impactful for me, you know. And after she passed, I realized that, you know, that she's closer now. Like, I don't feel a disconnect from her.
Right.
Even sitting at this table, yeah. I don't feel a disconnect when I walk outside.
You don't feel lost.
No, never. You know, there's always, and I understand what she said, you know. And so, yeah, it's just a powerful revelation, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.